but what she loved to do so, oh so, was to scratch her hand. It was the left hand. She always scratched it until the skin opened up, not only on the spots, but all around them, and bled, and then she went on until the ruby blood was flowing so that she couldn't feel the scratching anymore. And then she would stop and put a tube's worth of cream on over the blood. Wednesday, I found a rash on my left hand. I have put lotion onto it, and I won't scratch. A bath helps it to feel better, but I also feel it would be a bad idea to go into the bathtub for it. It was in one of her oatmeal baths that I saw her naked. That was one of only two times. The other was in bed with my father, but they were only lying side by side and just told me to leave. I remembered only yesterday that there had been that time, too. But in the bath one, I remember the oatmeal soap really was like oatmeal. It looked like it and smelled like it. It was white and shining and flaky lying there on the water because the water was not quite hot enough to cook it through. I opened the bathroom door and there she was, whitely sticking out of the water with little flakes on her arms and the oatmeal swimming all around her in the tub and the bathroom smelling like breakfast. I closed the door again and then for hours and days I carried around in my head the imprint of her pasty white as oatmeal body in the oatmeal bath. I wonder if she nursed me. I could ask her now, but I don't think she'd tell me. And I don't think she did, or I would have at least one memory somewhere of milky nipples over my baby mouth. She had very small breasts and put padding in her brassieres, but I don't think there's any reason not to have nursed me. Perhaps I will ask her soon, but I'm sure she'll just say something like, "Fine," or, "Did you see where the ginger flakes went?" She is always irrelevant and never to the point. I could make love down on the porch right under her bedroom when I was younger and lived there, and no matter how much noise I made, and I tried a lot sometimes, the best she'd ever say to me was, "It rained last night, the roof was creaking," or, "The cat got a bird outside by the tree last night, I'll have to put her bell back on." She is 59 and she saves things, and when you catch her labeling the jars with their contents looking like dried ginger flakes, she pretends she is not there, and she is not doing it. Her hair is too short and shaved badly on her neck. I often see flakes under her nails where she has been collecting, when I look. But lately, too, she paints them a dark red, and she grows them very long and then pairs them to a pointing curve. When she is scratching herself, you can hear it rooms away. The lines on her face are like tunnels. And she is like a gray-green moth. She rises out of the smoke of my dreaming nightly. When I wake from the dreaming and hold on to the arm holding on to me, and then look at the door, I see her like a sleeping moth with her long painted red nails clinging to the top of the door. One day, 1,000 miles away, I was looking into a different ocean than here, through a different kind of air, and she was still there. This time she was in the foam the waves made when they hit the shore. I keep thinking that soon she'll have scratched off all of herself, and only some kind of a cartilage covering will be holding her together, and inside the little labeled jars of ginger flakes will be the flakes of her own heart, labeled heart, dried up, maroon as dried wine in the bottom of a wine glass, and she'll keep right on paring her nails, scratching, and collecting. That's a hard piece.
It really is.
It was hard to write, it's hard to read it, and I understand that it's hard to hear it, but I also feel that it's a part of our experience. It comes from that semi-conscious place of dreams where images do float around like smoke.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our writing comes from some place in our subconscious that is completely uncontrolled, and a lot of the best of it comes from there, and it floats up, and sometimes I just feel like a carrier, that it floats up from somewhere inside me, and I feel that that somewhere is connected to something outside of me, something that's common to all people, and I like to think to all women. And it floats up, and it comes through me, and out my brain, and down to my fingertips, and there it appears on the paper, and there these writings are.
What would you say about somebody's response to this piece as a very negative view of mothers?
I have a hard time with that. I know that one of the things that I've been learning as I've been growing as a feminist is that it's really important to understand that our mothers were who they were, and those of us who were hurt in our childhood by our parents, not just our mothers and our fathers, that our mothers were products of what they were products of, and they couldn't help doing it, and that's really important to know. And I try very hard to get an understanding of what made things happen for the generation before us. Also, it's important to say that this piece is based partly on reality and a great deal, of course, on fantasy, on psychological reactions to what my reality was. What are your feelings about the piece?
Gee, I'm still thinking about it. It's a piece that I've read before. In fact, I've read it several times before I read it. When did that come out, Irene? In 1968?
1969.
Well, I read it when it first came out, which was before I knew you, as a matter of fact. I was very affected by the piece. It's a very powerful piece.
Your face, the look on your face is
this
like...
This is radio.
I know, that's why I'm describing it. It's like a kind of a squeamishness and a disgustingness.
Well, it is. It's a very disgusting... It's a very disgusting piece,
I think. Disgusting.
I mean, this woman scratching herself away, who finds the patterns of scratching and peeling oneself away and filing one's inorganic self... into bottles. Mm-hmm. The pattern of repetition here that the protagonist is afraid of, mm-hmm. you know, is frightening also.
Mm-hmm.
The desiccation of the mother, though, is kind of overwhelming. And I'm struck by the incongruence, in a certain sense, that you're using here of the central character examining her own organic processes, you know, going to the bathroom and so forth,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to that desiccation and stripping
mm-hmm.
of the mother. I think it's a terrific story. I think it's a very bleak picture of the mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah. I have a lot of conflict about what a writer can and can't, shouldn't those words do in writing. And I have never, ever sat down and made decisions about what I should and shouldn't do in writing, though I have the problem of doing that throughout every other area of my life. In writing, I let myself out of the shoulds and I shouldn'ts, and I write anything that I need to write.
I think a writer has to do that. I don't think a writer can afford to come out of a didactic place. I think that you have to come out of the place that you're most alive, and those are frequently the places you haven't yet filed away in those separate jars, like mother is filing away the cells of her own body. Those places are still growing, and so you don't know what they mean yet.
Right, and if this is an expression of a negative experience, we really have to take into account that there are a lot of people who will read this story, and mm-hmm. in this case will hear it, who might have had similar negative experiences, and they might distrust their memories of them. They might have a lot of trouble dealing with them still. And that's one more thing that we all learned, and I continue to learn in consciousness raising, that when we share things that have happened in our lives, we find that they weren't unique to us, and it's much easier then to get to the point where you don't take everything so personally. And if you can get to a point of seeing a person from your past, like someone as instrumental in making you who you were as your mother, in a more objective light and understanding where her oppression came from, what made her the way she is, it's through this kind of actually being able to express these thoughts and not censoring them. And if they're hard to hear, they're hard to hear.
Oh, yeah. You know what I'm thinking now? I'm thinking, again, about Mother and about its publication and about the image of mothers mm-hmm. in our society and how we have seen mothers as villains. And I'm thinking about the fact that the piece was published and that I know some of your other writing, which is more strongly feminist and very rich.
But
has not been published. Well, I just want to say that I do think that it still is acceptable to see mothers as villains. I think it's also accepting to see mothers as nurturing. Mm-hmm. But to see mothers, mm-hmm. to see the world of mm-hmm. women mm-hmm. as a world in which life and death takes place all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all of the little daily permutations of, mm-hmm. you know, this big struggle through women, I still don't think that we have a very clear view of that. I still don't think that we see very much writing that does reflect that.
Uh-huh. That's what we have to work for, I think.
Yeah.
Hi, we're back on live radio. I'm Irene Yarrow. The second story you heard, Mother, was mine. My guest is Carol Rosenthal, and hers was the first story called Cowboys. We'd love to have phone calls from you now, women, so let's hear your voices. The number is 826-0880. Please call us. While we're waiting for calls, Carol, one thing we wanted to be sure to talk about is the ways that women can support each other in their writing.
Yeah. The first thing I'd like to say is that we really need to support each other, because it's very hard for women to get their work published. It's hard for women's views to be seen as important or even as real. And it's just hard for us to get recognized. And I think a lot of times as women, we feel when we start writing and we show our work to people or they show their work to us that we need to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
Because being critical shows that we're serious. We're serious like men are serious. And I think that's very discouraging. It's really important for us to accept each other's communications within their own frame of reference.
Right.
Maybe you're asking for practical suggestions.
We'll get to practical.
Okay, I also want to say that I think it's very important to support yourself. And by that I mean the thing that you said on the tape, which I thought was terrific, and I reheard as we were listening to it in the studio.
Which is that?
Which is that when you write, you suspend your judgment, you stop censoring yourself.
Right.
And I think that's so important for any writer to do, and I think especially for us as women because we're exploring new terrain.
Right. Yes. Right. I think it's really, really important. One thing that we've done for each other personally is that one-to-one over all these years, we've read each other's writings, we've commented, criticisms,
right,
everything. But mostly we've been there for each other so that when you finished writing something and you were really excited about it and maybe you had 3 or 4 months to wait until somebody was going to say, yes, I want to publish this, you could say, read this thing that I wrote and tell me what you think. And I could read it, and if I had a positive reaction, hopefully I would give you that. And if I didn't have a positive reaction, okay.
Okay, and also, if you didn't have a positive reaction, what you'd say was that you couldn't relate to it for this reason or that reason, or you didn't like it, but you didn't say, this doesn't work because...
Carol, let me just interrupt 1 minute. There's some trouble on 826-0880. So people, please call on 371-5200. That's 371-5200. I'm sorry I had interrupted you
that. Okay. That's okay. I was just saying that the fact that when you didn't like something, you didn't respond as if you were on some cloud up there,
no,
some Olympian peak,
right,
saying some critical thing that was true with a capital T.
Right. So
it made me able to still keep my sense of the experience. Of course, we're not,
right,
going to like everything that everybody does.
And that's another thing that we learned from each other, that we were able to criticize and we learned to be able to take criticism, too.
Right.
It's very hard.
Sure.
So we had the one-to-one support. Then we had a women writers group, and this was invaluable, I think.
For me, it was terrific.
Yeah. We met once a week. We read our stuff. We sat there. We took each other very, very seriously. We gave critical suggestions, but we also mostly gave enthusiastic support. Yes, keep on writing. What you're writing is valid.
And some of the people in the group were completely blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still able to turn out work, you know. Not, I think that if they were in a writing class, a lot of people go to writing classes,
uh-huh,
I think they would have been very discouraged, but
right,
very gradually, because they were accepted as themselves doing what they were doing at that particular time, they began to build up their work.
Right. Then what else did we have? There was a symposium of women writers.
Oh, that was terrific.
Yeah. Where we each, many women that I know and myself got paid some money and got to give a talk on what it was like to be writers and to read stuff to a live audience. And this was, it was a really exciting experience. We have one phone call now. I think we'll take it. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello. Is this show taped, the show that's on right now?
Right now we're live. The you just heard a long taped segment, but right now we're right here.
Okay. The author of Mother, is that Eileen Ryan?
No, that's me. My name is Irene Yarrow, and I'm the author of that piece.
Okay. Can you spell your first name?
I-R-E-N-E.
Irene.
Right.
Yeah, I got it.
Hi.
I had trouble with that. Also, I wonder, where are both of the stories published, and where can I find them?
Mother is published. It was published in Carolina Quarterly a long time ago in fall 1969. Other than that, it hasn't been published. Cowboys has not been published, and that's one of the things that I find so incredible. It's not available. You heard it on the air just now, and I don't know when you'll hear it again because of a certain bias on the part of some kinds of people who publish.
Right, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you specifically if you had, since writing Mother, been able to write a story from the mother's point of view?
Oh, what a good question.
Because I know that I can write about the evil mother because I lived with it.
Right.
But I haven't gotten to the point of being politically aware enough and forgiving enough. to be able to write it from the mother's point of view.
Well, I'm not sure, and I might have to think a while and see what I've written, but I can say one thing, that I'm a mother, too, and I have two kids, and I know that I've written things about them. I've written an article about coming out as a lesbian and what it's like being a lesbian mother, and I've written a lot of poetry about my children.
Yeah.
Is that what you meant, or did you mean, have I been able to write anything as though I was my own mother?
Right.
Ah.
Because I know, I can write as a mother, too.
Right. I heard your children in the background.
I can't project myself into a head that I find so evil.
Yeah, well, I wrote a book, actually, called Janine, which has not been published. Mm-hmm. And in that book, the mother is presented largely, but... And it's sort of from inside her head, but I'm afraid she's still the evil character that she is in this piece, Mother.
Yeah, yeah. It's the sympathetic little detail that would
right.
redeem us all.
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot more understanding now. As I said on the tape, I have so much more understanding about made her like the way she is.
Yeah.
And I'm on my way to get, I'm pretty far on my way to getting to the point where I'm not resentful anymore.
Yeah.
And I would love one day to write a piece where I speak from the mother's voice and I'm understanding who she is from inside that piece.
I would love to write it. I don't
yeah.
I'd love to read it, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So, as we were saying, Carol, where were we at?
Gee, I don't know.
We were talking about...
I was going to say that there's another organization that I belong to that supports women writers, and that's called the Woman Salon.
Uh-huh.
And we sponsor different women writers approximately once a month.
Mm-hmm. What happens at the salons?
Well, approximately 100 to 200 people usually come and listen to one or several women read.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to meet each other,
mm-hmm.
too, and that's very exciting.
And women get to have an audience.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. The number, once again, is 371-5200. That's not the usual BAI number, but if you want to call us, it's 371-5200. Okay, yes, it is. My engineer tells me, yes, it's also the WBAI number. What about the term woman writer? We've done a lot of thinking about that. Is it a sexist term to say woman writer, or is it a defining term that's important because the issues that we talk about are definitely women's issues?
Both. You know, there was a symposium recently in which they discussed this, and the New York Times reported it and so forth. But I would say, yes, we are women writers. Yes, we do have a separate culture. It is, maybe you'd call it a subculture, but it is, our experience is different within the culture from men.
Right.
And also, if the term's used as a kind of reductionist term,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, then we have to say, okay, that's no good.
But if it describes and expands us instead,
that's
different.
That's right.
We've got three phone calls waiting, and I want to talk to those people. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say something about Irene's story.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry I didn't tune in time to hear the other one all the way. But I was surprised to hear you say that it's negative and that your mother's a bad guy, you know. I couldn't forbear to call and say I thought it was rather sympathetic.
That's great.
And it was horrible and gruesome. I mean, you're tearing your nails out and so on, but it wasn't to me. And it broke my heart, and I wanted not to hear it because it was so sad and horrible.
But it made you, do you mean that it made you feel sad for her?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really true.
Anyway, I don't want anyone, I don't want it to go unchallenged.
Beautiful.
That's full of hate, because I didn't perceive it that way at all.
No.
It was full of pity and bewilderment.
Yeah.
I thought.
I'm really glad you called up with that point of view. I agree with it. And it's amazing, I think, and important to say that I've seen it as a negative piece, but I think that's because of the ban on writing negative things about women.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's very compassionate.
Yeah. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thanks so much for calling and saying it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll take another call now. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm going to have to interrupt you before you go on at all, and that's to say something that's hard to say, and that's that this woman, this program is called Every Woman's Space, and I want to try very hard, hoping not to hurt any feelings, to keep all the energy on the show for, by, and between women and not take phone calls from men. And I hope that you can understand that, and I'm glad you're listening, but I do want to go on to the next phone call.
I didn't say anything about my sex, though.
Oh, you sound male.
I say, do I?
Yeah, well, anyway, thank you very much for calling, and we'll go on to the next call now. WBAI, you're on the air.
Irene, Carol, this is Sharon.
Hi, Sharon. Sharon,
I'm just supposed to turn on BAI and.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I want to say Sharon is in my woman's group.
Sharon, I enjoyed the reading so much, and I thought the discussion of the stories that you did as you completed each one was very, very interesting. You touched on a lot of very interesting points.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah, that's terrific.
I've been very interested in the whole area of criticism. I'm very nervous calling you up.
Well, that's okay, because we are too.
Of criticism and sort of as a means of support and encouragement of other women writers. And it's, I wonder if you'd be interested in talking about your feelings about criticism.
You mean like reviews that appear in papers and things like that?
Yes, right, of criticism itself, yes.
Yeah, Carol wants to.
Oh, I think we both want to. I think both Irene and I have had really rotten experiences with criticism. I know for myself, When I was in school, I got a lot of praise from some very famous writers. And then I got out of school, and I got some discouragement from some very famous writers. And so I stopped writing. And eventually, as you know, and as I said earlier on the show, I picked it up again. But it was just awful. And I don't think this is a question of being a weak person or a strong person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really feeling like your experience isn't being understood or you're not being recognized. And I know Irene had an absolutely devastating experience.
Just for all the people listening who don't know, I had a book published after writing for 15 years, a novel, and it received a lot of good reviews in a lot of places, but the one place that really mattered, the New York Times Sunday Book Review, absolutely destroyed the piece, and I didn't have the inner strength at that point to resist what happened, and I was destroyed as a writer for a long period of time after that. It's incredible what bad reviews can do to us, and I think it also ties into the fact that we're women, that we're struggling and fighting all the time to keep strong self-images.
Do you think that criticism can be used, though, even though a writer may not like a book, say, or respond to it, that it can be used to help support and encourage writers, rather than destroy them in the way that yours did, Irene?
Carol's?
Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I do.
It seems to me that that criticism, the way that critics do it, approach a book when they review it, is wrong somehow.
Mm-hmm. You mean you feel that it should come from a more supportive place?
Yes, right. Rather than judging something and saying this is good or bad or this has value or it doesn't.
I think like a lot of critics have this idea of how things should be, and they don't recognize a work within its own terms, and it's sort of as if you walked into a room and somebody looked at you and said, I hate your facial structure, you should have plastic surgery, don't you know? You should have high cheekbones, and you should have a stronger jawline. I mean, they're rejecting something absolutely structural about you.
That's what I mean. You mentioned earlier of you're reading each other's works, and that the way that Irene responded to it was to say, this doesn't affect me for such and such a reason, or I don't respond to it. That's a different kind. That didn't crush you.
No, because I know who Irene is.
Yeah, maybe I'll hang up now, and you can talk about it a little further if you like, rather than.
Well, what we're going to do is go on to another phone call, but thanks so much for calling.
Yeah.
And thank you, Irene, for the show. It's wonderful.
Great.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Do the women writers you know talk about the moral issue of abortion?
Of what?
Abortion.
I can't think of anything right now. But it certainly... Can you, Carol?
Do you mean in their work?
Yes, in their work. And come out with a strong right to choose attitude.
I can't think of anything that I've read recently or that anyone I know has written that's dealt with that. It certainly is an issue worthy of being written about.
There was a, in 13th Moon had a story about it, but I, in the, if you're asking do they come to a moral position, yes or no, is that what you're asking?
Well, I want to, well, in a way, I don't know what I'm asking.
I mean, it's certainly a crucial thing for women to be writing about, and it's certainly the decision whether or not to have an abortion and the experience of abortion itself has certainly been experience a lot of women have had. And
yeah.
Certainly there should be a lot of, it's certainly something that I think we're all thinking about.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish there were more work on it.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah.
On the newscast tonight on BAI,
right?
They had a lot of little blurbs from
the Right to Lifers.
Yeah, the women there, and they had a communication to us, and I would like to hear some communication from women that have decided that they have a right to choose, and. You know, and then to talk about the whole decision and about what their feelings about destroying the fetus.
Okay, I think that's real exciting, and I'm going to consider that I'm going to consider that a concrete suggestion for a show. And I thank you for the suggestion.
Yeah.
And it also makes me really aware of the fact that we really haven't seen very much on that.
There are so many women's issues that haven't been written about enough. I would love to talk to you longer, but we've got about two more minutes of airtime and one more phone call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks so much for calling.
Sure, bye.
Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh,
I'm sorry. It's been returned to me. We've got 60
seconds.
Hello, yes, WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I've been waiting for the phone to answer. I have a question to ask you.
Yeah.
First of all, is this Irene?
Yes.
Hi, this is Joan.
Hi, Joan.
What about women who are not yet feminists? Women writers. Women who still have male kinds of values and they continue to judge all kinds of works by those kinds of values. Do you feel, for example, that women have a kind of an obligation to be feminist or to express feminist kinds of views?
I feel that wherever women are at, that's where they're at, and I can't help but feel that with time every woman will become a feminist, because it's like sticking up for yourself in a way, but it takes a long time. I was a non-feminist for a long, long time after the movement began, and I think whatever women write is valid, and it's them getting themselves on the way to becoming feminists and sticking up for themselves.
So, in other words, if a woman is publishing the kinds of works that are anti-feminist or anti...
Oh, anti-woman.
Anti-woman.
That's real hard.
What kinds of? I mean, are those kinds of women, are they supported by other women, or?
I guess that's a real hard moral question that we'll have to go into in another show, because I'm afraid that it's 11 o'clock and we're out of time. Thanks so much for calling, and I'm really sorry we can't talk about that more.
Bye bye.
We're going to have to sign off now. I want to thank everybody who called. I want to thank Carol Rosenthal for being on the show. I want to thank the women who wrote me letters after last week's show, and ask you all to write me some more and listen next week, and we'll sign off with a little bit of our theme song, I hope, Holly Near singing Sister, Woman, Sister.
Sister, woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister, woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving, and you've forgotten how to fly? Oh, sister, woman, sister, did they take away your child? And they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild. Oh, sister, woman, sister, they won't let me come and see you no more, but I still got the poem that you wrote me. It's hanging on my apartment door.